We're good now? Thank you. Can I also have you reset the timer up here? Because right now I'm 30 minutes over the limit. Okay, good afternoon, everybody. I'll take this session in English, even though I just attended a Danish session just like half an hour ago. They were talking Skånsk, which is, I mean, almost like us from Copenhagen. Just to make sure you're in the right room, this is all about Configuration Manager, the next version. It is in technical preview right now, and I can only show you what is public, so that's what I'm going to do. I hope to do as many demos as possible, and I love questions, so whenever you have something, if you want to ask something, just shout. It can be in Swedish. I have some friends up here that can translate if I don't understand you. It can, of course, also be in English or in Danish. I will give you a bonus if you ask me in Danish. Who am I? My name is Kent. I work for Cortec in Denmark. I spent most of the time of my time, professional time, outside of Denmark. So I do a lot of work here in Scandinavia, in all of Europe, and also in the States and in Asia. I've been working with SCCM, and I know that's not the official name, but it's almost like it's called that by now. But I've been working with that product since SMS 2.1.0, which was like back in 96, 97. And one of the questions that I get a lot these days is, and this is kind of a quiz now, so you have to be involved. Is Configuration Manager going to die? I see this, I wouldn't say all over Twitter, but I hear it from a lot of people, a lot of folks in the business. I've had the question raised again and again the last couple of years. And when you think about it, of course the product is going to die, because just think about it. Eternity, that's like a very, very, very long time. And no one is going to be here forever. And I'm not saying that the product is going to die like right now, but eventually, I don't know, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, I don't know about that. I just know that right now there is a huge demand for the product, just like there was a huge demand for the product 5 years ago. And I don't see that all the Windows deployment, Windows 10 deployment and so on, making that demand even less. I'm pretty sure we will see Config Manager play a very, very crucial role in the future. So for those of you who have the same question, I mean, I'm sad to say that, but we're all going to die at one point, and so is all the products. Having said that, we're not going to talk about life and death up here. It's, after all, it's just software. The roadmap for the application as it is right now, hopefully you have 2012 R2 SP1 in production. If you don't have SP1 in production, make sure you go back home Friday morning and get that part done. That will give you support for Windows 10. It will give you support for some of the newer mobile device management features that you have seen throughout the day here at the conference. The goals for vNext is to be released here in Q4, meaning that, I mean, we can literally expect it any day now because we are in Q4. I'm not saying that it's going to be released tomorrow because I have no idea about that. But it will be released in Q4. The goal is to support all of the Windows 10 features that we know about. Not only the Windows 10 features we know about like right now, but also the coming features that we have no idea about at the moment. If you were in here just before lunch, you saw Johan demonstrating Windows 10 as a service, how we get those updates rolled out, and that is one of the features of vNext. You won't get that feature with the current version of the product. You can still manage Windows 10 with SCCM 2007. You just can't do any OS deployments. You can manage and do OS deployments of Windows 10 with SCCM 2012 R2. But to manage all the new features, you have to go to vNext. as I mentioned, the current release is technical preview, and then I added in an asterisk. And that's because we are running on technical preview 3, but those of you who have been using this feature, you know that we are already seeing software updates as a service in SCCM. SCCM is now currently on the third build. So when you install technical preview, you got the first one. I think it was back in September, we got an automatic update in there. I'm going to show you that. That was the second one. And just a couple of days ago, we got the third update in here, and that's the update that I'm using. So updating SCCM in the future will be very much like updating Windows 10 or updating Office 2016, so we might as well get used to that thought. That's not the same as we're losing control, because we're definitely not losing control. You're still in complete control. How do you prepare for this? Well, I wrote here garbage in, garbage out. What I mean by that is if your environment is in a pretty bad shape right now, upgrading that might not fix all the issues that you have. Those of you who attended the pre-conference yesterday, you know that some of the issues that we are seeing are related to a performance, related to the backend, meaning related to SQL. They are not going to go away just because you do an in-place upgrade. You might be lucky, but my suggestion is that you do a site review first, really go through and see if you have any issues, and if you have any issues, fix them, and then you can do your upgrade. If you want to do... I know of many organizations who say, okay, there is a new version coming out now. I wanna take this opportunity and start all over again. I wanna, you know, do like a migration. You cannot do a migration from 2012 to vNext. If you wanna do that, then you set up your new hardware, you install vNext on the new box, then you do an in-place upgrade of the old one, and then you can migrate. You'll be able to do a migration from 2007 to vNext, and from vNext to vNext, as it is right now. So that's kind of how you can prepare for all of this. For your site server, you have to be on ADK10. ADK10 is not a requirement right now. It's not a requirement for Service Pack 1, but it will be a requirement for vNext. And the reason why I'm saying that is I know that a lot of you, most of you hopefully, are using SCCM to do all of your imaging work. And if you have a lot of remote locations, taking the server down and replicating new boot images might be something you want to plan in advance. You don't have to do the ADK upgrade along with the vNext server project. You can do it, you can do it Friday. It will be pretty busy Friday, by the way. So how do you participate in this? Well, you can follow the link here. I'll make sure you get the slides after this. Just be aware that this is not a site version that you will bring into production. Don't make that mistake. And I know, of course, that none of you in the room here would be foolish enough to make that mistake because you're all bright and intelligent. But I do have customers back in Denmark that are not as bright as intelligent as you guys. And they made that mistake. I had two of them who made that mistake in 2012. They took a beta product. Somehow they got some code that would actually enable them to upgrade that into production. And they ran into a series of issues. So don't do that. And if you do, by all means, call, because it's going to be a nightmare. It's going to take hundreds of hours to fix it. So that's really good for consulting. you have to build a demo lab. It's all over every time. So, the version is time-bombed. There are some limitations in here. You cannot do an in-place upgrade. You cannot do a migration. So make sure you Google, hydration kit, and then Johan and Mike download their hydration kit and use that hydration kit to build your vNext environment. They are supporting that. This is actually what I just covered. So how do you get to Configuration Manager vNext? It's just treated as a service pack. Okay, so that's kind of the same steps that you have to go through. You need to check your database. Maybe some of you are actually going to change your database when you're going to vNext, because we will have support for SQL always on. And I know the TechNet documents are saying right now that it only works for a new installation. But I also know for a fact that it will work for existing installations, so you will be able to move your database to a SQL Always On solution if you want to do that. In order for you to stay current, we have the cloud feature, as I mentioned. So that one will make sure that you get information about new updates. You can go in and install those updates when you like it, when you feel like it. But just as Windows 10, these updates are not going to be there forever. At one point, you have to, you know, you have to go ahead and install them. Clients are a mess. I mean, a lot of you in here, if I ask a question, how many of you have 100% healthy and active clients, I'm pretty sure that none of you would raise your hands, except if you have a demo environment with 4 clients. So upgrading clients, installing clients, that's really often a nightmare. Now what they're doing is that they're offering us an auto-upgrade feature, not only of the major service packs, but also when we have CU releases and so on and so forth. And it's actually working pretty well, and it is the method that I would normally recommend. So just go in, enable the auto-upgrade feature, even if you are in an enterprise environment. I mean, we have this running in environments with 85,000 clients, and it's working. This is what it looks like, and instead of just showing you some slides, let me just go in here, see if I can find my environment. So for those of you who have never seen vNext before, don't worry, it looks like 2012. As I mentioned, treat it like a service pack upgrade. There are new features in a couple of new features in here. There are also a couple of new site systems. The first thing you'll notice is your updates and servicing node. So here you can see over here to my right side, I went with the first version of TP3. The first one actually succeeded. It says download failed, which is kind of funny. But it actually did succeed. The second one I just installed last week. So when I'm getting notification about a new version being available, I'll just go in here, I right-click, and then I can run my readiness. I can run my prerequisite checker. And what you will notice is that it's actually using the very same log files as if you did a real installation. So go into your prereq checker, and in there you can monitor the process. Once you have done that, once you're confident that this will go good, then you just go ahead and install the update pack. Right now, the cleanup part is not that pretty. So when I go into Configuration Manager in here, you will see I have something, a folder called Easy Setup Payload. And in here, I actually have the versions that it downloaded. So it's kind of funny that I have 2 full versions, and it still says, well, download failed. It's right here. When I install the client, when I install the update, it's going to ask me a few questions like, who do you want to use as pilot clients? So what I did was I just had, you know, like my traditional software updates collection, and I said, well, go ahead and use my initial testing collection as my pilots. So it's going to send a job to them and say, hey, you need to update your client. It's going to do the client upgrade, and I'll be able to monitor that process when I go into my deployment monitoring node here. And here you can see I have something called client production and pre-production. So this is kind of my main dashboard where I will be able to monitor how many clients do I have on the different versions. And I don't know how many different versions we'll see every year, but I know we are probably, if we want to play catch up with Windows 10, we're probably going to see just as many versions and releases as Windows 10. But that's just me guessing. Once I've done all of my testing and I feel confident that we are good, then I can go back in here, I can right-click, and then I can select my client update options. So in here I can change from my pilots group to production. So that's just me saying, you know what, go ahead and deploy the new client to all of my production environments or production clients. What it will do at that point, let's just see if I can actually find the real one here. At this point, it will go ahead and create a scheduled job in Windows. So in here you can see I have a scheduled job. This client is not upgraded. I've instructed SCCM to say, well, go ahead and install my clients plus minus 2 days. So it will just create a scheduled task, select a random time, and then at that random time it will go ahead and upgrade this specific client here. I go ahead and kickstart the process. And then, you know, I could just go into my CCM setup log file and monitor that specific process. I am actually encouraging you to do that. And as a matter of fact, every single time we have, a new client, a new feature, go in and find the log file, because the log file will give you a lot of information like, what setup command lines is this one using? Is it using the command lines that you have specified, or is it actually using some special ones? And I can tell you, if I went into CCM setup right now, I would see that it's actually using some special command lines. Those special command lines, it might be that you want to use them in another scenario. So that can be kind of useful. So that's my automatic upgrades. Hopefully it will make my life easier. I truly hope so. For some of the infrastructure changes, as I mentioned, we will have support for SQL always on. That support is being adopted by the SCCM team because it has been a request by you for many, many years. My advice is to keep things as simple as possible. And keeping things as simple as possible means don't use a clustered SQL. Don't use SQL always on. I mean, don't use a remote SQL. You have probably heard me say, and some of the other MVPs saying that for years. And this is nice. If someone is requesting this, it's working. I'm happy. I'm not going to use it. But that's not the same as saying it's not working, right? It's just me. Maybe I just don't understand the technology. Then we have some diagnostics and usage data. So when you install the environment, when you install your primary site server, it's going to ask you, so do you want to send information about your behavior to Microsoft? And we're all like super crazy about that. So of course we say, yep, I want to do that. And then they say, well, you know what? We're going to send up some information, but don't worry. We won't sell them or anything like that, so you just go ahead and trust us. And yeah, we're going to do that. We know NSA have the information anyway, so who cares about if Microsoft have them. Some of the other infrastructure changes is the on-premise management device, MDM feature. Jürgen covered a minor part of that in the previous session. So Windows 10 is coming, you know, the number of devices, the different devices that you have to manage is kind of exploding. 3 years ago, as an IT pro, it was easy for me to go in and say, well, in this environment, we have these 5 laptops and these 3 desktops, and you would know anything about the different hardware. You would know how to, you know, dismantle everything, put in extra memory, and so on and so forth. Forget about that. Those days are over. Now you're going to see Internet of Things, you know, like a ton of different devices. Some of those devices you won't even touch. The on-premise MDM is not going to, you know, replace Intune or cloud-based MDM. It's not going to replace your internet-based connection management or anything like that. It's just going to complement what you already have. So it's just another way for you to manage some of your devices. On-premise MDM is for those scenarios where you have some machines that do not have any internet access. You don't want to install what I would call a traditional FAT SCCM client on them, but you still want to manage them. You still want to have, you know, inventory information. You still want to be able to manage security information like Defender, Windows Update settings, and so on and so forth. And we all know by now, or we should know by now, that Windows 10 has a built-in MDM agent. So we can control that MDM agent. We just need to enroll Windows 10 into our MDM environments. With vNext, we can do that. Right now in vNext, it's only covering Windows 10, and that means your Windows 10 desktop laptops and your Windows 10 phones. I've heard at Ignite that there have been talk about also extending that support into iOS devices, but I've not seen anything about that, but hopefully that will come. With Windows 10 devices, when we enroll these, they will actually be treated like mobile devices, so even though it's a normal laptop, meaning that I can also do a remote wipe and I can do a retire of that. That's one of the features that came in the update last week. When I look at my inventory data, you'll see that it's kind of limited, and that's because I don't have a traditional agent in here. So if you go like, I want all the data, I want all the richness, I want full control, then the MDM agent is not the way for you. Then what you want to do is you want to install a traditional client. And if you have been to one of my sessions yesterday or maybe a couple of weeks ago, this is perhaps my favorite Windows 10 slide. So I just need to kind of highlight this because management begins with your identity. You have Active Directory, Azure Active Directory, we have EMS, Intune, we have the normal on-prem stuff. When we go down and look at the management stack here, you can see we have group policies. Let's not talk about them. We have the configuration manager, and then we have the MDM agent. So the MDM agent is controlled by URI settings. So make sure you understand OMADM. Make sure you go back home Friday. That has to be Friday after lunch because you will be busy before lunch. But Friday after lunch, you download the white paper. I'm going to give you a link, and it will tell you about how OMADM actually works. Because it is through OMADM that we can control a lot of the Windows 10 settings. Let's have a look here. I will say that installing and configuring on-premise MDM is a little journey. It's a little journey because not every step is actually documented. So you just like any other, you know, technical preview. We ask to get the software out as fast as possible. We get it, but that also means that maybe you know we don't have all the A to Z guides out there. So the first thing you really need to do in order to get this working is actually to set up a PKI environment. So in my environment here, I just installed a certificate authority on my domain controller. You need to configure the same template, the same certificate as you do when you want to do normal Mac OS X support. So that is documented. That part is documented because you can just take the document from 2012 R2. Then you need to make sure that you actually publish your CRDLs. And this part here is not documented. But if you don't do that, you will have issues when you're trying to join the SCCM environment. You'll also have issues when you try to download policies and so on, because the MDM agent will actually check for those CRDLs here. So this is like very important. So just make sure you have this sorted out before you start doing any work in SCCM. The good thing is that I had to take a lot of notes when I did that, and I published all of these notes. I have all the steps in a blog post, so you can basically just follow that blog post there. Once I've done that, I'll go into my vNext environment, and in my vNext environment, you'll have to look at the requirements in here. So for your servers, for your distribution point, your management point, you have to be operating in HTTPS mode. So make sure on your distribution point that you have HTTPS and that you allow your mobile devices to connect to this distribution point. Failure to do the allow mobile devices to connect means that you won't be able to download software. So you can control your clients, but you won't be able to publish modern applications to your clients. They will just be like in a download pending mode. The second thing is you need an enrollment point, and you also need an enrollment proxy point. The good thing in here is that these are super easy to configure. So just go ahead, go through the wizard, and install them using the basic settings. The final one would be my management point. So again, in here, I just allow mobile devices and Mac computers to connect to this one here, and that's the infrastructure that I need. I'm not saying it's easy, because most of us are not operating in HTTPS mode. I can see that when I go to customers. It's like 9 out of 10 are operating in normal HTTP mode. So there are a few things that you have to verify in terms of the certs that you're using. Also make sure that they don't expire during the project and so on. I have seen that. Going to my client, if I think I'll start by looking at a client that I know works. So this client here, when I go into accounts and work access, you'll see that this one here, this the top setting here is my MDM agent. The button one here is if I want to, you know, join the on-premise or Azure AD domain. I don't have to do that. So this one here, I just joined it to my SCCM environment. And you can see here that my management server is actually vnext.corp.viamonster.com, which is the name of my server. I can also see here when I last attempted a synchronization. And I'm running on Pacific time, so this is actually working pretty well. It's synchronizing according to my client agent settings. That's another funny thing. I mean, some of the settings we use in the MDM environment will be taken from the client settings. Others are like built into the products that we have. With this in mind, let's go ahead and see if I... can take this one here. So here I have my work access. I can go in and connect. And my name is Bob. And Bob is using the wrong keyboard. There you go. In order for this to work, I still need an Intune connection. But the clients here, they won't go to the internet. They won't when we get the final release, because right now they're actually doing that. But that's another story. So my server is my internal SCCM server. So that will be vvnext via monstra.com. this is part of the demo. I say, trying to look trustworthy. This issue here is because I don't have the cert. So I need to have the root certificate from my site server. If I do not have that, I will run into this one here. So how can I kind of mitigate that? Because I don't, you know, I don't want all of my users to walk around and import certificates and so on and so forth. If I go back here, then one of the new features we have in vNext, if I go in here to my administration, we have all corporate-owned devices. iOS, we have had, that is for the DEP support. We have had that for a while. But now I can also use create enrollment profiles. So I have an enrollment profile here that I can use for my bulk enrollments. When I'm creating an enrollment profile, let's call it Sweden, it's going to be my management authority is going to be on premises. What I want in here is I want to make sure that they're actually assigned to the management code here, the site code VN3. I want to make sure that this is for internet only, and this is the enrollment point. And then this is the tricky part. So please go ahead and make sure that they actually get this certificate so they don't run into the first error that we just saw. Once I've done that, I can also, if I have deployed a Wi-Fi profile, I haven't done that right in here, but I could add that to the package as well. Remember, this is still not a finalized product. There are a ton of other things I would like to see in an enrollment package, like, for instance, some of the apps, maybe some predefined settings and so on. That could be kind of neat to see that. Once I have my enrollment package, I can go ahead and export that one. I can say, well, this is only valid for a certain number of days. I can encrypt the package, but there is a minor bug you might run into if you actually do this. So you go ahead and test it. If it works, it's great. But we have seen some issues where it's actually not working, and then you have to go in and remove the encrypt checkmark in here. So let's just store it here. Demo is a good name. So now I just take this package here and I make it available to the end user somehow. This is just like Wicket. I know if you've seen demos of that. So when you make it available, users can run it in any way they want to run it. You know, right-click and apply the package, and it should go ahead and import the certificate. Any questions so far? So when I do get the device enrolled, you'll see in here that the devices that I have, and I cheated a little bit. I had the device enrolled already. I just removed the enrollment and deleted the cert. But then it will just show up as a mobile device. So when you go in here and you start looking at your Resource Explorer to see your hardware data or your software data, the information you're seeing here is limited. So it is very much like the information you would see on your Windows phone, your iOS, and Android devices. We're not using WMI the same way as we are for a traditional FAT client, but that's pretty okay. In order for me to manage the devices, as I mentioned, you need to know about OMADM. So those of you who attended the session, the previous session, Jürgen showed you how you do that in Intune. What I've done here is I have completed all the Defender settings, and I've also added in a setting for allowing trusted applications to be installed. That's another one when we're deploying our own modern apps. I really want to make sure that this one here is set from the beginning. And this is one of the examples that I talked about I would like to see in my provisioning package. Maybe I don't want my apps, but I want to make sure that that one there is configured before it actually starts downloading policies for installing apps, because if it's not configured, my apps are going to fall or fail. creating a new item in here, you'll notice some differences. So first off, up here I have kind of almost looks the same, but you'll see here this is for devices without the client. So if you want to use the built-in Windows 10 MDM agent, just go ahead and use this one here. When we do that and click next. Oops, this is another bug. go ahead, I have already created some of them. Some of the OMADM settings are actually updated in the latest version, but I will just go ahead here and click Create. And then instead of adding a registry value, I'm going to add in my OMADM setting. Now the thing is, your OMADM settings kind of guessing the data type and guessing the value and the setting itself is not that easy. So you need to have some kind of documentation. And to my knowledge right now, there are two places. You can download the OMADM PDF file that we have been using also to manage Windows 8.1 devices. That's like 100 pages. It has a ton of different settings. I got a question last week, how can I go in and disable Cortana? And you can actually do that. You'll find the setting in there. Another one. If you go to my blog here, when I kind of created this article, I also added in a link to the official page, and this is the page that will tell you. So how does this actually work? So in here I can see the structure. I can see exactly what I have to type. And if I scroll down, all the way down, I will see all of the different examples. I can see the values. If they're 0 and 1, I know it's just an integer. And if it's a string, it will kind of tell me that it's the string. So all I need to know in here is, so what is the name of the group and what is the name of the setting? And then I'll just take that information. That's what I did in here. And let's see where I have that. Then I just copy that into my OMA URI string in here. So it's just a matter of copy and pasting. Is this easier than, you know, go into a group policy and click apply? No, not at all. I'm trying to find some positive stuff in here, and I think when I have to create it manually, I'm in more control, because I have a tendency of, you know, let's click enable and see what that does, and let's see what this is doing. And then all of a sudden, it's 3:30 on a Friday, and I have to rush out of the office, and I forget that I actually did that. It's not really the same in here, because it will take me a few minutes to create each of them, each of these. But once you have them, what you can do is you can basically, just like most of the objects we have in SCCM, just go ahead and export it. So if you want to play around with this, I have already, as I mentioned, created all the Defender ones. Just download it from my blog and import them in here, and you should be good to go. Azure. I have everything running right now on my laptop, and that's just because it's kind of neat. I don't have connection to Azure wherever I go, so it's not that I don't trust it. I totally trust it. I have a lot of my environments running there. With the new version, you can have everything running in Azure if you want to do that. You can also have parts running in Azure, parts running on-prem. You can have clients, of course, running on-prem, your distribution points in Azure, your management points in Azure, and so on and so forth. The vision that Microsoft has with this one here is that running it in Azure should be just like running it in your own data center. So if you want to run it, you know, in your own Hyper-V environment, that's fine. If you want to run part of it here, that's also fine. There should be no difference. Some of the client-side changes that you will run into, we have a unified portal that was just introduced like a couple of weeks ago, which is kind of nice. I mean, I might be the only one who got confused about, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 different portals. I know that you probably like all of them, but I would like to see, you know, just have one entry point for all of my SCCM data. And they're working towards that. So what I have right here is I have a portal where it's actually mixing my applications and my packages and so on and so forth. So it just makes it easier for all of us, because let's face it, it is kind of a mess. Users get confused. They don't know when they have to go into Software Center, when they have to go into the app catalog. And if you have a mobile device, then you have a third portal. Then you also have the company portal. we have some new client settings. I'm going to show them in a few seconds here. For the portal, this is going to be like the shortest demo I've ever done, but I just want to make sure that you actually see it. So when I go into my portal here, I have it right here. So you'll see I have my Software Center. And if you have Technical Preview 3 installed but you don't see the portal, then it's because you're not running on the right version. So you need to go in here and make sure you're running on the right version. I'm running on 15.10, but it's also part of the previous one. So you can see, this is an application. I have a couple of updates in here as well. There is a new look and feel to it, and unfortunately, it's not Silverlight anymore. We're going to miss that. So that was like the shortest demo ever. Executing the software is still the same. Some of the features we're going to see is, first off, we're going to see improvements in software updates. A lot of you in here are working with a monthly approach, meaning that you're going to install, create an automatic deployment rule. Then that automatic deployment rule will cover all of your updates for October. In that automatic deployment rule, you will go in and have multiple deployments. That's the approach that I like. Now we can actually do that. Now the automatic deployment rule will support multiple deployments, which at first sounds like really, really good. It's a neat feature. There's just a little twist to that feature that I would like to see changed. We have automatic cleanup. That's also a kind of a mess right now. If you have never done anything to your WSUS database, then you'll notice at one point your clients, you know, kind of stop scanning for compliance, stop scanning for your software updates, meaning that you have an issue because your environment might look good, but that's just because nothing is really happening. One of the reasons why we run into those issues is that we haven't done any cleanup in the WSUS database. You need to do that. It's a database, so you need to make sure that you actually, you know, treat it as a normal database. Do some defragmentation, remove old updates, remove your superseded data, compress the data, and so on and so forth. This one here will go in, and once a month, it will clean up all expired updates. So we'll do that as part of your WSUS synchronization process. And you can see that again, you can see that in the log files. There is also a cluster aware support. Cluster is in quotation marks because it's not really looking at the resource and saying, oh, that's a cluster aware resource, or that's a cluster resource. It's just a check mark on your collection. So you can go in and say, well, treat all of the devices I have in here as cluster-enabled devices, which is really, really cool. So I can have, it could be 15 workstations. And I can say, well, only, you know, install the updates on 20% of these workstations at a time and doing it in this sequence. So I can go in and say, well, first take workstation A and then B and C and D and so on and so forth. You can also run a script. So before we start doing anything, run this pre-script. And once we have done everything, can you please go ahead and run this post-script? So you can control what's in those scripts. The scripts can be VB scripts or it can be PowerShell scripts in here. And then we have Windows 10 servicing. And it's not a mistake that I put it under software updates, because that's how we are actually treating Windows 10 in here. So when we get, you know, the next build of Windows 10, that will actually come in as an update. So you will go ahead and place that update in an update package, and then you're going to use that mechanism to deploy the updates. So you'll still have, you know, the same control, the same everything, which is kind of neat. Those of you who attended Johan's session a little earlier, you have seen this, but I'll still go ahead and do a demo here so we can see all of the features. Let's just get that one down. So first off, moving into my software updates here, if I take a look at my automatic deployment rules, you'll see that I just have a single patch Tuesday and a Windows Defender automatic deployment rule. You'll also notice when I click on my deployment settings here that I actually have multiple deployments, which is kind of neat because now I can fully automate everything. Just run this automatic deployment rule just like we do today, and it will go ahead and create multiple deployments. I can still go ahead and say if they should be enabled or disabled by default, so I'm not losing any control. I'm a little weird, so when I saw this, I was really, really, really happy right until I actually ran it. Because what it's doing is it's creating a software update group for each and every of my deployments that I have in there. And I don't want that. I mean, this might still patch my workstations and my servers and so on, but I want to have one software update group because that's the way I want to control stuff. That's the way I want to track compliance and so on and so forth. So I'm glad this is not the final version. hopefully they will change that, because in my opinion, it should be one software update group, or at least I should have the option in here to go ahead and say, before I add a deployment, can you make sure that it goes into the same update group as my master up here? That would be kind of neat. The rest in here is kind of the same. So there are no reason for me to go ahead and demo this. So this is one feature that we have. The second feature we have when it comes to... Oops, let me go to my sites. The second feature we have in here is on my software update point component. So most of the settings in here are exactly the same, but down here you will see I can run the WSUS cleanup wizard. And I see no reason at all why you should not check this one here. if you have like a traditional standalone primary environment. I mean, this is something that I scheduled today, so I would have a WSUS cleanup job running at least once a month in my CM 2012 environment here. It will also, when I check this, you'll also notice when you go ahead and remove your expired updates, or when this will remove your expired updates for you, that it will do the cleanup. I mean, it will also remove the binaries and so on and so forth. It's actually doing a pretty decent job. Moving into my software library, this is where I have my Windows 10 servicing. So you can see in here I have a few machines in here. So it will automatically collect information about my Windows 10 machines. It will automatically look at my Windows 10 setting and figure out if I'm, in one ring or if I'm in another ring and so on. It will just go ahead and look at your software update settings that you have in there. This is like an overview. This is a dashboard meant for us to, you know, figure out if we are actually ready to deploy the next version of Windows 10. You can deploy the next version of Windows 10 by creating what is called a servicing plan. So I have my servicing plans down here, already created one. There is absolutely nothing in it because there are no updates released yet. But I could go ahead and create a plan in here and say, well, this is going to be my CBB demo updates. Who is your target collection? Well, that would be all sitting up. That will be my pilot one and not servers. I don't have Windows 10 installed on that many servers. So I'm going to select this one here. And then I can say, well, what is your readiness state? When should we actually apply this one here? And in here, well, my release, when they're release ready, and you can go in and specify the number of days that you go from that point until, you know, you go ahead and deploy these. So this is, to my knowledge, right now, the only way we can actually really control deploying and managing your Windows 10 updates. Might be others, I'm not aware of that, but right now this is kind of what we have. So I want to do my current branch for business. Click next, 54 days, and the rest is just like your normal traditional software update settings. So do you want to do it like, you know, as soon as possible at a specific time? One thing I'm kind of, I don't think will go that well, the default setting is hide everything in Software Center. So it's like, now we're going to deploy a 3 GB software update on your machine, and we're not going to tell you. And by the way, it's the operating system. We're pretty sure you won't notice. I think we have to plan for this. But then again, I'm not sure. And of course, we want to, you know, restart the machine and all of that. This is a brand new process. And, I mean, you really need to invent a new process. So by that, I mean, how are you going to warn your user? How are you going to, you know, pilot all of this? I mean, this is super, super interesting. I have to select the deployment package. So as I mentioned, this is my traditional software update adventure. Just go ahead and do this, and then summary, and there you go. So now, now I have two servicing plans, and I can go ahead and run them, and you will notice that it's go into your log files, you'll have your patch downloader and everything. There is nothing to see in here right now because there are no updates. And just like your normal ones, you can just go in here and take a look at all your settings and change your settings and so on and so forth. But this is like super interesting. And this takes me back to my quiz question that I had in the beginning. Is Configuration Manager dead? No, absolutely not. This is a superior way to manage your coming Windows 10 environment. Okay, so OSD, we need to deploy the Windows 10 machines. I know that some of your Windows 10 devices, you're just going to, you know, unpack the box, and then you're going to join Azure AD, and that will work fine for some of them, or you're going to join an on-premise SCCM solution. But I'm pretty sure that the majority of your machines, you'll still have to go ahead and deploy those. In the beginning, you could, I mean, we have seen that you can go in and apply a Wicket package, and then it can convert your machine from pro to enterprise, and it will be ready for the business. I'm pretty sure that will happen to some devices, but I'm very, very, very positive that a traditional OSD is going to be here for years to come. So we have a couple of new features. We have a Windows PE cache feature. So I just like for the software updates in here, I can say, well, the first one that downloads the image, the packages, the driver packages, the traditional packages, that one will just be used to go ahead and share that content to the other ones on the network. And the cool thing is it's super easy to set up. It's super easy to test and see if it actually works. I'm going to show you that. Then we had some changes in Service Pack 1, and one of them is handling software updates, so that one with the multiple reboots and so on and so forth. In my opinion, it shouldn't really be a problem, because you should not be creating your reference images in SCCM. You should create them in MTT, and you should create them every patch Tuesday. So, I mean, all the stuff about running into this issue when you do a deploy task sequence, I mean, those days should be almost gone. Then they have renamed a few things. That's not really super interesting. But let me go ahead and show you some of the features here. So first off, when I go into my client settings, you'll notice here I have a custom client setting called Benelux. So in my custom client setting, the only thing I have in here is I have some remote tools, and then I have my Windows PE peer cache setting. So what I'm saying here is that the clients, the devices that are being affected by this setting here, they will actually be turned into Windows PE cache devices. So do you want to enable that? Yep, I want to enable that. The second thing I've done is, if I go to my software library and go into my OS deployments, task sequences, in here I have a task sequence, and the only thing I've really done in this task sequence is, I've said, well, I want to download the package content. So that's a new step in here. And then, what is it exactly you want to download? There are a few limitations here. So for instance, you can see I have my operating system, so I have my WIM file. I can go in here, and you'll notice that I cannot select my applications. I cannot select my software updates. So the idea is really good. It works, but it just doesn't support all your content types. So there are still a few steps to walk here. So this one here, I just took and then I deployed that to a single client that I have in my Benelux office. The third step is to instruct my clients when they're doing the OS deployment, when they start that piece, that they can actually use content from a local source. And that part is just a variable. So I go in on my collection, and I've done that here. I've just done unknown computer support in here. Go into my all unknown computers, and I go in and take a look at my collection variables, and here you'll see I've specified these variables. So preserve content, meaning, hey, you can participate if you want to, and also peer download, you can go ahead and do that. And that is all I have to do. After I did that, I tested it, and I have it right here. So this machine here, this is the SMS TS log file, and you can see here that it actually downloaded and it used the branch cache feature. So it actually, this one here just started up. It took the WIM file, it took the package, it took all the content that it could take, and it just ran it from that local source. So now some of you are like, yeah, but what if, you know, if the machine with all the content is shut down and leaves the office? Well, it's treated just like a distribution point. So it's what happens if you shut down your distribution point. So the client will just, you know, reconnect to another one and try to download the content from there. Having said that, If this is an approach you want to use, of course, you don't want to do this on laptops. I mean, you want to have kind of a machine you know is actually up and running all the time. So the content is just being staged, and then it's actually grabbing the content from there, which is pretty neat. Another OS feature that we have probably seen a few times is the built-in upgrades task sequence. So I have a task sequence here that I call Windows 10 pre-flight, and that's because I have this environment, a lot of Windows 7 machines. I'm not sure that all of those can actually, you know, go through a Windows 10 upgrade process. So what I want to do is I just want to, you know, collect some data and figure out if they are actually good enough. And then if they're good enough, I can go ahead and upgrade those machines. Those of you who attended Johan's session earlier, you know that there is a specific feature or command line that you can add to your setup, and then it will only collect data. It will just figure out if we can actually upgrade the machine. Well, we have the very same feature here. So perform your Windows setup compatibility scan without starting the upgrade. So I could actually run this one here. I did that on a machine. And the machine is actually right here. So this is just going through the process. And here you can see that it's doing the slash. That was just quick. Here you can see that it's doing the slash combat and then scan only. That was a reason why I did a pause on that machine. So it will just go ahead, you know, and do the scan stuff, and it won't, at least I hope it won't, re-image all of my machines, because then this demo environment has to be fixed. Yeah, there is also some news about drivers and so on and so forth, but we have seen that. We have seen that so many times that I didn't want to show that. For MDM, I mean, there is a ton of changes. Most of the changes are already in Service Pack 1, but what we will see with vNext is that it will be aligned, not 100%, because it's impossible to be aligned 100% with what we have in Intune, but it will be aligned pretty much very, very close to the Intune features that you have in here. Already by now with Service Pack 1, we are very much aligned with Intune. Intune is still the platform where we'll see support, you know, zero-day support coming out first, but doing hybrid mobile device management in Configuration Manager is still a very valid way of doing your mobile device management stuff. And as a matter of fact, I kind of prefer that. I prefer that for two reasons. One, PowerShell. Two, reports. So when I have my mobile devices in a hybrid scenario, hybrid meaning that I'm using Configuration Manager to control my Intune and all of that stuff, I also get the mobile device information into the Configuration Manager database. And we're all talking about, you know, devices like being the same instead of having laptops and desktops and so on and so forth. So your management are also going to require that you can do reporting from one source. I mean, you don't want to have reports over here and another set of reports over here. You want to have them melding together because, after all, it is, I mean, all of your devices in here. So you'll see a ton of changes. This is not the final version of the product. I'm not saying it's unstable, because it's really not. The scenarios that I've been testing out, I've been running this for I don't even remember now, but ever since we got the first technical preview, and it seems really, really stable. And as I mentioned, it is like a service pack, so it's not a brand new product in here. With that, if you have any questions, then we have exactly 1 minute for Q&A. No questions at all? It's the first SCCM session ever that I have done without a single question. So the question is, what about MDT integration with SCCM? So the question is really, is there a new MDT version coming out? I'm pretty sure that there will be a new one coming out. I think you Johan addressed that earlier. Yeah. So they will still be aligned. There will still be a ton of very good reasons for you to integrate MDT into Configuration Manager, even though when you go into your task sequence now, you'll see we have some of the MDT steps in there. But I mean, just getting access to all the variables, to the scripts and so on, that's still a valid, very valid point of doing the integration. The links that I've added up here, now we are at Friday afternoon or Friday evening. And if it's like in Denmark, they're showing absolutely nothing good in the TV Friday evening, this is what you do. So make sure that you go in and read these links in here. This is the last two links are from Michael Niehaus. So he explains the Windows servicing stuff, what it's all about, the current branch for business, and the features in here. So are you going to do that one? Are you going to do that one? Are you going to do that one? Right now, I know that a lot of us are kind of very confused about what's really going on. And we have like a lot of different servicing options. And to be honest, probably just focus on this one here. There will be some scenarios where you want to do the long-term servicing branch, but most of you will just be in the middle one here. So make sure you go in and read this article here. I mean, it will take you just a couple of hours to read it and understand it. But you have all Friday, right? With that, I actually used my time plus 50 seconds. So thank you all for coming. And if you have any questions, I'll stick around and answer those questions. Enjoy the rest of the conference.